siren has sounded, lads, but it's simmering. Still feeling in this. Corbett misses, and that encapsulates the night for the Suns. The Brisbane Lions peel off 5 straight wins. They soar into second spot on the ladder.
My word, they do. Everyone loves a Q clash. None more than Kelly Underwood there on Fox Footy last night. She was calling with Brad Johnson, who saw the Brisbane Lions defeat the Gold Coast Suns by 45 points with a little bit of tension milled through the evening as well. Jono, good morning to you.
Good morning, Harv. Good morning, Whitey. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, it was a good clash last night. The Brisbane Lions just were pretty dominant from the outset, to be honest. They were pretty powerful. The way they moved the ball was very good. Gold Coast just could not get into it at all. So in the second half, I think they just tried to get a little bit more physical, the Gold Coast Suns, and turn it into a bit of a scrap more than anything. But Brisbane were very good across the entire night.
So it pretty much locks them into a top two finish, doesn't it? The Lions, what they've got to come and what they've been able to do. Who they got on the way home, Jono? They've got Sydney and Carlton. You reckon they win one of those? So they should definitely lock them into a top two.
Yeah, and the percentage got a massive boost last night as well, Half, which we all know it's, you know, the fight for the top four is still wide open, and so is the fight for, you know, probably position 7 and 8 or even 6, 7 and 8. And it's going to come down to percentage in the end. There will be some sides that will be on equal points, and double chance could come down to how healthy your percentage is in top 8 as well. So it was a big boost for the Brisbane Lions last night. And the thing about the next 2 weeks with them is they probably will win those games, but it'll be a lot more competitive than what they got last night against the Gold Coast Suns. The Swans are looking to finish strong. They're playing pretty good footy. And the Blues as well. And we know they'll compete hard around the ball. So it'll be a great lead-in for the Brisbane Lions against those two teams.
You made the comment last night on the coverage, Jono, about Brisbane just looking that little bit fresher. We spoke to Lachie Neal last week on the program, and he conceded that they'd gone a bit flat in the games, particularly against St Kilda and North Melbourne. But whether it was Charlie Cameron, who looked as good as he's looked in 5 or 6 weeks, but players like Hugh McCluggage, they just looked like they were running on top of the ground a little bit more. Did you feel that was the case, not just in one or two players, but collectively?
Oh, look, across the board, Whitey, you're exactly, you're spot on there. And even Lachie Neal post-game when he was interviewed, he spoke about his own self-assessment that he'd gone away from hunting the ball. And that was his whole goal for the game last night, was just get back hunting the ball and getting some energy around the contest. So he provided that, had an unbelievable game. Even when Miller went to him in the second half, he still, you know, managed to rack up about 15 disposals in the half and have a huge say. Eric Hipwood was probably had the biggest impact last night, I think, as a Brisbane Lions player. He was excellent. He led up really well, took 4 or 5 marks in the first quarter, got his game going, took Collins out of his comfort zone, got him a bit higher up the ground. And that really helped the way that Brisbane were able to connect from D50 right through. So Eric Hipwood had an excellent game. You mentioned McCluggage, and Cameron was a bit of a spark. And Payne coming into the side to replace Harris Andrews as well showed that he's going to be able to match the biggest type of bigger type players from the opposition over the next few weeks. And he took 4 or 5 intercept marks in the first quarter on King. So he started the game well. He made a few errors as fatigue came into it, but he'll show that if Harris Andrews comes back, that those two may be a pretty good combination, allow Darcy Gardner to play on a better opponent.
All right, I've got 3 questions for you from last night's game. First one on Eric Hipwood and his goal kicking. When does it become a real problem for Chris Fagan and for the team, considering we're about to go into a final series where bad goal kicking cost Brisbane potentially that first final against Richmond, and it's been a bit of an issue all year? Do they try and address it, or they may have already addressed it, or does that become a more of a head issue for Eric if they spend too much time emphasising it?
Oh, look, no, they need to emphasise it. It's as simple as that, because you're right. It's going to cost them in a final. They made some errors again last night. Even Cam Rayner with that snap from the goal square, you know, like that was just something. You just need to go back, have the set shot, give his team 30 seconds to actually have a rest as well, kick the goal. There's another minute. Players don't realise that as much. You know, they make these decisions to snap around the corner. If he goes back and just takes his time, it actually helps the team to recover, and some of his teammates to recover as well if he just kicks the goal. So so there was that. But, yeah, Eric Hipwood, I'd love to actually know how much work he is doing in terms of goal kicking per week. I'd love to know how many shots he is getting in. I know it's a bit difficult at the moment with the congestion and the frenzy that's going on, but outside of that, you know, Matty Lloyd was one of the best goal kickers of all time, but spent so much time on his craft, like every session, every single session, hundreds of kicks. And I don't know how much time is being put into that consistently at the moment. I'd love to know that from a Hipwood point of view or a Hugh McCluggage point of view, who's kicked a truckload of points this year. And if it happens in a final, it could be the difference between winning and losing.
Eric Hipwood's goal-kicking technique is horrendous. His body is all over the shop. He's got different angles, and every part of his body, it's going at a different angle. There's no chance of him having any confidence in that ball going straight from what I can see.
Yeah, I agree, Harvin. We've done a lot of work the last few years with just a small terminology that we come up with plant, with purpose. So we've been working a lot on the plant foot at the moment. And the plant foot's really interesting because when you're sort of in general play, you think of when you go kick the ball, you plant really hard because you've either got a bit of pressure around you, you hit the ground hard. When guys kick the goal, they actually relax and they plant really softly. And when you plant softly, the angle of your foot's not correct and your hips will follow that. These guys really have to start working on that plant foot, I think, in terms of planting with purpose. If you do that, then you're going to create the strength required. You can still come in with a slower approach and do all that. But your last few steps, then you plant with some strength. If you plant with strength, especially under fatigue, you're likely to get through the ball a lot better. But if you plant relaxed, you're going to kick relaxed. And they're not making the distance. They're kicking them left and right. So it's a really simple technique that I worked on for a very long time throughout my career. And it certainly works.
Oh, I'm with you on that. Right. And interestingly, Jono, you talk about distance. It's one of the challenges in the women's game that I deal with my Carlton girls, that they often plant lightly. And that we've talked about that. I haven't used that term plant with purpose, but I might do it now. But the plant leg is so important. The weight's got to be put through your plant leg so you can get your hips, your other kicking hip, or the side you're kicking with, through the ball really effectively with power. And that's what we've been trying to work on too. I reckon it's a really good call. Plant with purpose. I like that.
Yeah, plant with purpose and you'll get the strength required to at least kick through it. And the good thing with the plant foot too, it determines your hips. So if you plant straight, your hips are going to follow straight. Even if you're off a little bit of an angle, your hips will follow that angle. So it's really important. It's a really good focus, especially for those that are developing in the game.
I know my two young boys will be doing this morning a two-hour session, plant with purpose. I think you've covered the other one, which was the Cam Rayner miss. But I think the interesting thing with Hipwood was that he had really positive body language last night. He was really jumping for his marks with purpose. I just wonder if he kicked well, just how much more that would elevate the rest of his game to have that confidence to fly consistently for his marks. The other one I want to ask you about was Isaac Rankin. Isaac Rankin did some crazy things last night, some really impressive things, but some horrendous, horrific things as well. Where he leapfrogged his opponent and all those sorts of things, and a couple of pretty interesting moments over his head.
What did he do there?
He sort of just didn't really go up with any sort of conviction to a high ball. But which is what I did on a regular basis, so I'm not going to be criticising him for it. But what do you... I mean, has he got to the point where he needs to be pulled into line, or do you keep him going because of the magic he can create?
No, he can offer more in-game by getting the basic skills right. I think that's evident. I think everyone can see that. Everyone wants to see the flair of Isaac Rankin, and that is part and parcel of why Gold Coast Suns supporters and we will tune onto the box and go to games to watch him play, because of that magic that we will see on a regular basis. That needs to be a part of his game. But there's aspects of it that, and I think that that Kingy was putting across last night as well, in that just when he's got the basic handball to hit, you don't need to dodge and weave, just hit it and move on. Gary Ablett's the best player in the competition and has been for a long, long time because he gets the basics right every time. He sees the 20-metre kick, he hits the 20-metre kick, and then he moves on to get the next thing and work on his game. But we still see the flair of Gary Ablett and the dodge and the weave at the times and the magic come in. And I think that's a great example for an Isaac Rankin to go... The best player that we've seen, that I've certainly seen through the modern time, does the basics unbelievably well. But we still see the best of the flair. And Rodney Eade had a really great philosophy in terms of building your base. So we worked on the triangle theory where you got the base, the strongest part of the triangle, and at the point was your flair. And he still wanted flair in our game. And it was a big part of the way that he coached us as a group. But it didn't hold up your performance. So it would come in every now and then when you just needed to, and a natural thing would kick in. So I think that's something that that Stuart Dew will work with Isaac on, in terms of creating a really good base to his game and creating that work rate and the basics and all that sort of stuff. The flair's there, but you don't tip that triangle upside down and have the flair as your base, because that's, you're not going to survive that way. You're going to be put yourself under too much criticism. So it's quite a simple theory, and I think it'll work well. We still want to see the flair, but he still needs to get other aspects of his game right so he has a more rounded performance.
Does the easy thing often and well, and the rest can take care of itself. You can play after that.
Yeah, cool.
That's fine. What about the Gold Coast? Since round eight, they've had one win, one draw, six losses. They started the season with a bang, obviously, with the row factor early doors before he went down with a shoulder injury down at the Cattery. What have you made of the back end of the season for the Gold Coast Suns, the emerging Gold Coast Suns, Jono?
Yeah, it's been a little up and down. If you look at the start of the year, and their pressure was as high as any other team in the competition. They were working in numbers, collectively getting over, outnumbering, moving the ball with some fluency from that. That's dropped away from a Gold Coast point of view, whether that's fatigue, whether that, you know, the immaturity of the group in a way to survive a full season, which will develop. We're talking last night around the fact that Stuart Dew put it on this playing group to come back as fit as they ever had last pre-season. But that seems now like, and it worked for them at the start, but it's not enough for that young group to maintain a whole season as of yet. So the level that they're at last year to returning to training, that's the start point of where they need to be for when they return. They need to go to another level with a lot of areas, their strength, their fitness, and all those sort of things. You look at the Brisbane Lions, and you look at McCluggage and Berry, and even Witherden, who didn't play last night, and a few others. They're a good size now after a couple of pre-seasons. They're still young players that are driving that team forward. So for the Gold Coast Suns, it really is those younger ones that need to come back at the start of summer, basically as fit as they were last pre-season, and build and go to another level with all of that.
Did you see, I'm assuming you did, considering you were on the coverage, but the footage of Matt Rowell actually coaching David Swallow? There's a couple of times where it was fascinating footage to see a four-gamer talking to the captain and essentially coaching him.
Oh, he's the messenger, isn't he? Yeah, Matty Rowell. You can see that he's got the headphones on. Someone will be telling him, tell David, the next time he goes to the contest, he's got to do this. So, look, it's an interesting role, isn't it? And I'm glad sort of Matty has jumped into that, and you can tell he's a footy head and really wants to get better in all aspects. This will help him for the future as well. I know he's really young in the game, but at times I'd love to see a Matty Rowell relax. I do agree with that side of things as well, because it is such a demanding game, but he's invested and you can see that. And I think his teammates will thrive on the back of seeing the youngest player on their list so invested in where this club wants to go. So it's only a positive, and Dave Swallow took it on board, I'm sure. How are you going half? What are you taking advice from a first year player?
I would have told him to jam it. I would have said, Jono, what Chris Langford said to the runner. Said the runner Chris Connolly, when Ken Judd sent him out one day, I think Tony Modger might have got a hold of him on one occasion. The runner came out to Chris Langford, the great Chris Langford. But he got the bat centre half back, the runner, Chris Connolly. And Langer sort of knew he was coming at him, and he just stopped and pointed and yelled, "Oi! I can play! Bugger off!" Or another term.
Yeah.
And Chris sort of stopped, looked, shook his head as if to say, "Yeah, fair enough," turned around and went back to the bench.
I love those stories. The stories of players that have told the run. Now, you go and tell the coach. This is what I think of him. Oh, I just sort of put myself in those positions at times. And if I was on the bench when I first started and I was trying to tell a Steve Credilk or a Steve Colenook what to do, I know what they would have told me.
Yeah, there's no
or
way.
Or a Steve McPherson. Or imagine telling Doug Hawkins, you're not playing the wing that well, mate. You're not controlling the Doug Hawkins wing. You got to do a better job today.
Got to get on the skinny side.
Oh, goodness. Yes. Goodness, mate. Now, did you do the Adelaide game the other night, Jono?
Yes, I did. I'm trying to remember what I've done, Harps, honestly, in the wash-up of all of this. No, I didn't do Sydney and Adelaide. No, I didn't, mate. I had that one off which was nice. So, but what a game it was, honestly. That was Adelaide and the Giants, I should say, looking back now. Sorry about that. It was Sydney and Carlton. Apologies. No, I didn't do that that game. But what about the Adelaide Crows the last couple of weeks? And we talk about teams half, to be frank, we spoke about Fremantle and ruining the run, if you like, of the opposition coming into finals and Fremantle beating Melbourne, which that's the game I did. That sort of starts to ruin the run. And you can see Fremantle with the next couple of weeks, they'll play the Bulldogs in the last round. It's a pretty strong mentality that they're playing with. They're playing a good brand of footy. And you can see sides, even the Sydney Swans now are more up and about. They'll be looking to just, you know, halt the momentum or can they adjust the position to affect the team that could play finals. So they're dangerous teams to play against with that sort of mindset.
What about the Giants? I mean, the story's probably the Giants. We talked about Adelaide the other day when they took the win. It's great to see two wins in a row. And spoke to Riley O'Brien yesterday, and he was up and about, as you can imagine. But the Giants have been a fascinating talking point all year long in the world of AFL. What are they? You know, how come they haven't been able to get back to the dynamic team that they used to be, Jono? They were grand finalists last year. They've won a final every year, and all of a sudden they're having this year where they're just a team. They're just meh. That's pretty much how you describe the Giants at the moment. You've got no faith that they'll be anything more than just an average team.
Yeah, I had confidence that they would bounce back off the grand final and have a really strong year, knowing Leon Cameron and the way that he can drive the group. But maybe the effect of a big grand final loss is bigger than what we sort of anticipate. You know, look at the Adelaide Crows and what happened to the club post their big loss in the grand final. It just seems like for the Giants, they're trying too hard at times. The expectations there to bounce back, and they're just not flowing as a group. And some individuals are playing well week in, week out, but overall they've got no fluency as a team, and they're trying to manufacture that, and they're chasing their tail to do that. They're trying too hard to get it right. So they don't look relaxed in sort of their movement and those sort of things. So yeah, it's been a really disappointing year so far, and it's right on the edge now on whether they can play finals or not.
I think, generally, one of the interesting things with the Giants is the ruck situation. It seems, particularly in the shortened games, and we talked to Adam Simpson earlier this week about the influence of the shortened games and how defence is so much easier when the games are shorter. But it's also a territory game, and I hate that term because it's a term out of NFL, but the reality is it is. And when they're getting hammered in stoppages because they don't have a good ruckman, it's amazing how much of an impact I think that's having on the Giants more than any other team. And they got belted by Adelaide in clearance last week. So, again, a little bit like Essendon at times, they're trying to start their attack from deep in their defence. It makes it a lot harder. And, you know, their inside 50 counts have been low all year. And I think a lot of it has got to do with the fact that they're losing crucial clearances, not just a number of clearances, crucial clearances when they're trying to get themselves back into the game. And maybe they do need to give up one of their star players to get a really good ruckman in, because it's been an issue now for them for quite a while, to a point that they bring a bloke out of retirement to try and help that issue.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Whitey. I think the opposition have walked out of, well, not walked out of, but got out the front of stoppage against GWS a lot easier than what they would have expected. So therefore, the entries going into the Giants' defensive 50 are a lot stronger, a lot deeper, a lot harder to transition out. And the opposition know that they work on the Giants, that they know they've got their back half run is part of their game. The midfielders get back and then they flow. The orange tsunami, you know, gets going. So that's something that the opposition are well and truly aware of. And I think now they've been able to sort of counter that more often than not. So, yes, they're losing the stoppages, but then they've usually been able to counter off half back. And they're not able to do it with any effect at the moment because of the way the opposition understand the way they try and move the ball.
So, Huff, to emphasise that point, just on the weekend, now the overall clearance numbers were 34-24 Adelaide's way, but centre clearances were 9-3 Adelaide's way. So whenever you go back to the centre to throw the ball up in the middle of the ground, straight away, on 75% of the occasion, it's in Adelaide's half of the ground when they go back to the middle. So it's hard to build any sort of momentum when even if you do kick a goal, that all of a sudden you're not getting that chance to kick another goal and all that sort of thing. And that's kind of the Giants' problem. They're not getting that momentum in their game where the confidence can build. Anyway, just an observation.
Yeah, no, it's a fair observation. They've been a very, very interesting case. Interesting case, too, with the Hawks at the moment, Jono. We talked to Isaac Smith yesterday, and there's a lot of rumblings that that list, currently as it is, won't be anywhere near that next year, particularly from the experience perspective, where players might be looking to move on to other opportunities, with certainly a rebuild, a reset, or a restumping. I'm not sure what they're doing at the Hawks these days, but there needs to be some alterations to what's happening. What do they do? Do they move on blokes like Isaac Smith or Jack Gunston or Sean Burgoyne? Poipolo probably is on his last legs, I would imagine. How do they play this, the Hawks?
Yeah, I think they've got to go to the draft. I think that's one aspect that they'll understand as a club. They also still need to have an eye for a trade. I think that's important. Whether that's the trade to get some draft picks in, or whether, you just never know, half in this world of AFL of ours, that if a 24-year-old just might land on their lap, you just never know what's going to happen at the end of the year. So you've got to have that just parked in the background. But I think the draft is the way to go. And some of these key players that have been unbelievable for the team may retire. You mentioned a couple there in Burgoyne. Puopolo probably thinks he's got footy left in him, but you never know what mindset he's in at the moment. So we'll understand that in the next couple of weeks. And then there's talk around Smith and Gunston and Bruce, guys that have done so well for that club for a long time. Yet now we're saying, they're probably a chance in discussions to get traded out. I wouldn't be... Unless that player desperately wants to leave to go and find success somewhere else, because we know Hawthorn's going to probably develop over the next few years and those guys won't have the grand final or premiership success with the Hawks. But I don't know. Like, they've been great for that club for a very long time. You'd love them to finish in that environment. So, unless Clarko can see an option for them, like what has happened with Jordan Lewis or Luke Hodge, whether he has Sam Mitchell, whether he has those discussions with the older players, that's something we wait on. But it would be totally expected of Clarko to have those conversations if that's the way he's thinking, because he's done it in the past with his very best players. So yeah. let alone some guys that have been unbelievable for him, but not as good as the ones that he's had those conversations with in the past.
Half, what do you think Jack Gunston's worth on the open market?
Well, I think there would be teams out there that would pay handsomely for Jack Gunston. He's a rare player. The way he plays that position is that almost pseudo key forward, if not the size. Mm-hmm. But he can play that high half. Jono, he can go down back and be your spare for a little while. I think for a contender, for someone sort of sitting, anyone who's contending or thinks they can contend, I think they'd pay a handsome price. Whether or not that's a back end first round, early second round, who knows? But I think he's a very attractive proposition, Jack Gunston.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree. What a player he's been and continues to be as well. And you look at the Brisbane Lions last night, Whitey, and he'd slot in there nicely, wouldn't he? Imagine a Jack Gunston there. Mm. Not that every Hawthorn player is going to go to Brisbane just because Chris Fagan's aligned with them. But look, I think a Gunston would be Hawthorn fans don't want to lose him, but let's have that discussion in case he does go. Even a side, maybe Collingwood then, but Collingwood's got enough sort of those hybrid type forwards. St Kilda, he'd be a great fit for the Saints. Look, we could go through every team. The Melbourne Footy Club would love a Jack Gunston to be running around in that forward line at the moment to just complement and help Wiedemann in a way. But he needs to play. I think Gunston really played his best footy when he was the third, when he was the third tall, for example. You had, I know they had sort of Buddy and Ruffy, and you had Cyril floating around, and then Gunston and Bruce would do their bit. So he plays his best footy when he's got a couple of bigs that are really competing in the air.
Yep. 29 in October he is. So he's still, the way he plays, young. He's still got two or three good years left in him minimum.
Yeah. Could
Jono,
be four or five.
Jono's only halfway through at 29. He's had another 10 left. That's how good he was. He'd be pretty handy at the Saints.
I'll tell you what we need, Half. Lincoln McCarthy thinking about last night. You know those thigh pads you wore for a very, very long time?
Yes.
Lincoln McCarthy, he might have to get on the phone, because he caught one of the biggest corkies I've seen in some time. And it's either yourself or Paul Ruse that will have to supply, I think, some good padded bike pants for for Link over the next couple of weeks.
Tell you what, they work. They look stupid, and you sometimes feel stupid wearing them, Jono, but they work. They work.
That's
and they
the
help.
Main thing.
So you do what you got to do. What about tonight's game, Jono? It's a Kilda and West Coast. It's 6v5. It's an absolute ripper, and I think someone off the SMS was saying before, I haven't done the numbers, but they certainly have, and that if the St Kilda win by over 30 points, now that's a good win over West Coast, just by the way, that they can jump them, they can leapfrog them on the ladder.
Wow, that's enormous, isn't it? Well, St Kilda sit, on 36 with a percentage there of 113. West Coast is 115 on 40 points. So, yep, this is a big game for both clubs, of course. St Kilda holding on to play finals, and West Coast trying to get themselves inside the top four. The West Coast Eagles have made a number of changes. They're unlucky last week with the amount of injuries that they copped, or what they've suggested are out through injury. And Archie, Sheed, Redden, Lewis Jetta, Hutchings again, we knew he was injured, and Tom Hickey has been omitted. They get some big inclusions back when you look at Nick Natanui, Shannon Hearn back into the side. Young Brayshaw, Petrucelli and Bradner come in along with Schofield. So Saints, they get Max King, Nick Hine and Tim Membry back into their lineup. So they get some experience. So this is going to be an absolute cracker. Tonight's football and tomorrow, Friday night, Geelong and Richmond. Two unbelievable games to start round 17.
Well, you think, Jono, the West Coast... Yeah, sorry, Half. I was just going to say, from a West Coast Eagles point of view, again, using the reference of our chat with Adam Simpson, a lot of their injuries are to their midfield. So Redden, Sheed, Jetta, and then add to that Shuey not there as well, and there is one more, Yo. So that's five of their best eight midfielders missing from the game tonight. That leaves them incredibly vulnerable.
Oh, it does big time. And that's where St Kilda fans will be sitting there, thinking that way around, we could have a big win tonight with how depleted the West Coast Eagles are. You've got to cash in when the opposition aren't as strong as what they should be leading into the finals. And hopefully St Kilda create that opportunity for themselves tonight. And I think I'd just like to congratulate Liam Duggan as well on 100 games tonight for West Coast. The boy from Bacchus Marsh has done well in terms of what he's done as a junior. He was a young draftee in terms of that he was probably the youngest in the draft when he was drafted. He's found his way over to West Coast and I think he's had an amazing career so far. So well done to Liam Duggan.
The Saints, if they win by 30, they can leapfrog the West Coast Eagles. But if they lose, they put themselves in a very precarious situation as well. So it's a very important one for the Saints. They'll be looking at that midfield and saying, we've got to get on top there and give our forward the chance against this very strong West Coast defence, it must be said. So it is a beauty. I'm really looking forward to that the game tonight. And then, of course, tomorrow night, Jono, which we'll obviously focus on a bit more tomorrow, but love to get your take on Richmond and Geelong. Like, it's the one we've been waiting for so long, and it's so good that it's come in round 17. You've got the two, probably the best contenders you'd think. I know Port Adelaide and Brisbane are sitting on top of them on the ladder, but we're talking about powerhouse teams and teams who know how to get it done. Richmond and Brisbane and Geelong are those two teams, Jono, and they take each other on in the second last round of the season.
Oh, it's enormous, Half. It really is. It's going to be an absolute cracker. And we wait for the lineups to come out just to see what changes or if any that the clubs will make. And you sort of look at Geelong and you go, okay, well, they're playing good footy at the moment. They've still got some absolute stars to come back into the lineup as well, which is just unbelievable considering how well they're going. They've got, Selwood and Ablett, just to name a couple, and Zach Tui that can step straight back into their best lineup. So it's strength to strength for the Cats and the Tigers. How it's really important, I think, for the Tigers. A big win against the Cats will settle a lot of the talk, off-field talk, I think, about the club. It'll refocus and realign everyone back onto the type of team that they really are. So I think this is big for Richmond for that point of view, because everyone's talking about the external factors this year and, they're unsettled and, there's influence and all that sort of stuff with what's happened. So a big win 2 weeks out from the finals will, I think, realign everyone to start talking about them again as a football team that can win it.
Right, let's get your expert opinion, Jono. Who wins tonight and tomorrow?
Who wins tonight? I think, well, looking at all those outs, but I love Natanui back into the side for West Coast. I think West Coast will win just, but it's going to be a cracking game. And I think the Cats will be too good for the Tigers tomorrow night.
Righto. So West Coast and Geelong for the next two games to kick off round 17 in the AFL. Jono, it's always a pleasure spending a Thursday morning with you, mate. Well done. You went to bed late last night after working. We appreciate your time. And, of course...
Yes, the Greyhound's in tonight, Harp.
Of course it is. Is it, it runs every day,
every
your dog.
No. So I hope the girl's having a spell, but our boy King of Swing is back in tonight. He raced last Saturday, and he raced at $101 and $14 a place, Harp, and finished third. So I hope our listeners got on. I did get the tip. I don't know how a Greyhound gets out. Well, I don't know how that happens, but it happened. So so we'll look tonight. He's in box four tonight, and we'll see. If he gets a good jump, he is a chance to place again. But he's in the, what did you call it, the squeeze box half.
So the squeeze.
It's going to be a little bit more difficult for the King tonight.
Well, good luck to the King of Swing tonight. Check your local guides to find out when and where, what time it is. But back it for Jono's sake, the Western Bulldogs legend, a big part of our team in 2020. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
Brad Johnson every Thursday on the Breakfast Club through the footy season. What a champ he is. So we'll get to a break. Speaking of champs, another one, another legend of the game, Shane Crawford, is going to join us after this. Stick around.